Hello, everybody. I'm sorry I can't be with you in person at the Congress because the orthopaedic department at Auckland Hospital require my presence to put in a new right hip joint. It's been bothering me for about a year now. If I deferred that operation then, it would have been another 6 weeks' wait, so I hope you understand. I was asked to give my opinions and observations on the process of retirement, which I'm well into. I'll be 78 in about 6 months' time, and I'm having a great time. I'm doing this recording as an adjunct to the main program. At the end of the presentation, there is my email, and I'd be delighted to hear from you if you had any questions. It does take the pressure off time somewhat, and I don't have to be constrained to a 12-minute presentation, which was the original plan. It's a great program, and I really do applaud the college for considering these really important interfaces in our career. Retirement is one. I spent the latter probably 10 years of my life dealing with another important interface, that is the transition from medical student to junior doctor, and I think that's an important one as well. So in terms of retirement, the first slide is just one of my favourite beaches, and I'm just asking the question how that should happen. My history is that I did retire, I graduated rather, in 1967. I had a year as a rural general practitioner because I had a health department bursary, and I spent that on the west coast of the South Island. Prospectively, it looked like a career-ending move, but actually, it was one of my most valuable years. I trained in surgery in Auckland, and after spending the requisite 3 years in England, I came back to a whole-time position at Green Lane for 7 years, and then for the last 30 years of my professional life, I was at North Shore Hospital. I had a small private practice in 1992. I've been involved in other parts of my career in quite a lot of colorectal cancer research. I've taught trauma care. In 1978, I was invited to join a panel of doctors in managing those people who were facing crises in their career, and I was part of the Doctors' Health Advisory Service. What I want to point out to you in the next slide is the question of how long our retirement is going to be, and you may be surprised to see these data. You will see from this slide that males aged 60 can expect to live another almost 24 years, and if they're 70, about 15.75 years, and the difference in that is probably the cancer hump. The same applies to females, although their longevity is, of course, probably affected by estrogen, and it's a bit longer. Bear in mind these are averages for the general community, and because doctors don't have life-shortening behaviours such as smoking, then our retirement may be considerably longer than this slide portrays. So the next slide makes the point that you can reasonably expect to live into your early to mid-80s, and that the retirement phase of your life is going to be quite long. So the next slide poses these questions. When are you going to stop clinical practice? And what do you want to do when you retire? And what are you going to do for those 20 plus, maybe 25 years after your standard retirement age? Now, the next four slides portray what you might do with that. You can see the world, or you can go to sea, as I do occasionally, and catch these things on the next slide. And you can play golf. I just want to, the next slide points out that there's a major hazard here. I would really urge you not to use your retirement for leisure pursuits that you've had in your active practice. Those things are breaks from our life. They're part of the rest and recreation, to go and fish, to go and play golf, to socialise. But if you fill your life with that, they're going to lose their charm. And what you thought would be an enjoyable life playing two rounds of golf a day for 25 years, you will be sadly mistaken. So the next slide points out that there is this myth of work-life balance. no matter whether you're an active in active practice or you are in retirement, you need a balanced life. You need some purpose in your life. And I just remind you that in my book, you get old because you slow up, not the other way around. So the next slide just portrays the message that if you've been miserable and unhappy as a doctor, don't expect a joyous retirement. I have heart sink moments that when doctors getting near to retirement say, I've had a terrible life in medicine, but it's all going to be great when I retire. It goes with the saying that I'm miserable because I don't have enough money. And when they get all the money they require to live, they're still miserable. So I've got a slide about this later on, but you have to have had a good medical life, preferably, if you want to have a good retirement. The next slide just points out that we do have these anomalies, that we're well prepared for long periods of our medical life in undergraduate, postgraduate, or specialist training programs, but we don't prepare for this 25-year period of our life, which is retirement. Another heart sink statement I hear is, oh, I'm going to retire in December of this year, and this is August. What are you going to do? See more of the grandchildren and play golf. And that particular anecdote was recounted back to me a year later by the wife of that doctor, who said that his retirement had been quite miserable because the grandchildren didn't know who he was. He was terrible at golf, and lesson after lesson failed to make him a better golfer, and he began to hate the game that he loved. So the next slide just deals with a few myths about how one retires. People say, I'll retire when my colleagues say I'm past it, which is really interpreted in my view that you'll just retire when and how you want to. The next slide is another myth, addresses that point that no one's going to make decisions about when you retire. You have to make that decision yourself. Do not rely on your colleagues to tell you when to retire because they're too polite or they like you too much and have respect and won't tell you what to do. Another myth in the next slide is that if you're unable to cope with the call duties, you'll retire. Well, the next slide points out that if the situation's got to the point when you've noticed a decline in your function, then it's probably too late for you to do anything about it, and you should have retired considerably earlier. There's an interesting point in the next slide, just pointing out in a survey of Australian physicians what the difference was between intention and actuality. At the age of 60, most people intended to decrease their work hours. But at the age of 65, more than 75% of the physicians intended to continue in paid employment. The next slide just points out that in another study, these are American data, that people work on because they enjoy it, they think they're contributing value to the workforce, they don't have enough money to retire, and I'll talk about that in a minute. There's a variety of other reasons, and they want to stay mentally active. Can I assure you, in retirement, you can be plenty active in the mental sense. The next slide just points out the legislation in New Zealand. You do not have to retire, provided you're fit for the job. The Age Discrimination Act stops that mandatory retirement in Australia, and the Human Rights Act in New Zealand. So the next slide just points out the ethical dilemma that if the general population is not bound to retire, why should doctors do so? Well, obviously, we have a profound effect on the lives of others, and therefore, I believe there should be objective appraisal of clinical capability after a certain age. And the next slide just shows briefly how we might assess competence. And I now want to move into, on the next slide, what we fear in retirement. We'll be useless, frankly. We've lost purpose, we've lost status, we've lost busyness, we don't know what to do with ourselves, we lose health and vitality, and we lose companionship. So it's quite a forbidding area to go into. If you have these things front of your mind, I want to reassure you that should not be the case. The next slide just points out that many of us have long, stable, supportive relationships with our life partners. And this quote from a wife of a recently retired surgeon 8 years ago stated that retirement was twice the husband but half the money. And there are issues for the life partner. They lose space, they lose their freedom, they lose their leisure, and they may in fact have compromise in their own job satisfaction if they are in employment. So the argument is, should I do more or less of the same? For doing a bit less of the same, coming off acute rosters, doing specialised clinics, you offer a service, your advice and of mentoring is always good, and you can teach, you can retain some clinical skills, avoid the on-call and maintain some sort of income. Against that, however, and we use this aphorism in surgery, there's no minor surgery, only minor surgeons. There will be collegial resentment, and you may be denying positions for younger, possibly better specialists. So the next slide asks the question about going past retirement age. Are you going to be happy doing that? Are you competent as determined by peer review? And have you had objective assessment of cognitive function? I think if all the answers are yes, and that's what you want to do, go ahead and do it. But the main question in the next slide is not when should I retire, but I should retire when. And the next slide points out that you should retire when you've given it a lot of thought, realised it's a fork in the road, not the end of the road, made proper preparation for it, and discussed it with the key people in the rest of your life. So the next slide just gives you some tips about the timing of this, and you may be surprised to hear me say that you want to be planning your retirement 25 years before you do so. You should get a good GP, get a digital rectal examination, get your blood pressure and your lipids done and your HbA1c, skin check, PSA for the boys and breast screen for the girls. You should see your GP at least yearly, get your vision and hearing tested, and look after your teeth. I'm amazed at the number of well-retired doctors who are forking out thousands because they want to recover teeth that should have been dealt to by good dental hygiene. We don't face a problem with dental caries. We face a problem with periodontal disease, and that is the major cause of tooth loss. So get that sorted 20 to 25 years out. The next slide talks about money. I made a decision in 1990 to revert from life insurance for my wife and three children to getting a superannuation package together. And I did a hospital-based one. I put in 5%. The hospital put in 7.5%, rising to 8%. And I ended up, when I retired, with a good package that gave me about just over 50 grand a year, tax-free. I had some savings, but you should too. You do need to define where you want to live. For my point, I live in the same place that I lived in when I came back from England, and we've been here for therefore nearly 40 years, and I've got a social network here, so my family, and so I've decided to stay here. But if you want to go and live near the beach, plan that at 25 years, but talk to the people that matter about that. And as I said, your practice partners, if you are a private practice, need to know about this. Next slide looks at really planning your employment, if that's what you want to do, apart from medicine. There is a problem with doctors who rush out thinking they'll be highly sought after. I'm sorry, folks, that is not the case. You will not be highly sought after unless you have skills. So 10 years out is the time to get those skills. And there's a variety of things that you can do. What I did was to do a diploma in professional ethics, and I've had quite an interesting life since that time, giving ethical opinions on a variety of things. You do have to market yourself, but go to the people that you want to work with early in the piece and say, I'm thinking of retiring in 10 years' time. This is what I think I could do. What do you think? Go back and see them a year later, and a year later, and a year later. And you'll find they will warm to the notion and see that you're committed to the organisation that you want to work for. I think fitness is really important, but that is not a question of wandering down to the gym and getting on a bike and doing a few weights. You must have a supervised exercise program. We are lazy. Even though we go to the gym, we take shortcuts, and you want a personal trainer to give you a program and keep an eye on you. I have a personal trainer. I see them about every 6 to 8 weeks. They give me a new program, but while I'm in the gym, they're watching, and they'll come up, give you a tap on the shoulder and say, don't do it that way, do it this way. So that's really important. The next slide talks a little bit more about Monday. In New Zealand, there's a lot of voluntary work available, and people sometimes rush into that a bit too much, and you can actually be working quite hard for no recompense at all. I think a little bit of pro bono is nice, but your time is worth money and you should expect to be paid for that. Jacinda Grant Robertson, the Minister of Finance in our government in New Zealand, will give you as a couple about 24k tax-free a year. And as I said earlier, a 25-year super fund will generate between 50 and 52,000 a year. So you can live have an income of about 1,500 a week tax-free. And you can live on that, as the next slide shows. And it goes up, 1.8K, you can live quite comfortably. Where I'm at is at 2.1K, which gives me a decent overseas trip most years. And therefore, your lump sum should be about 100K. I've had the benefit of some good investments in the share market, and we've got a share in a forest, which I got into in the early 90s, and that's been interesting. I would point out, as I alluded to earlier, that after about $80,000 a year, there's no increase in happiness. So money is not always the answer. And the next slide, which I will let you read, is important, and this is a wonderful quote from the Dalai Lama about the relationship between health, money, and your personal satisfaction. So I'll leave you to consider that for a minute. So the next slide just shows what I'm doing. I'm a council member at AUT University, which is a big university in Auckland, not as big as Auckland, but it's going really well. We've got some very interesting issues or challenges or success in South Auckland, where we have a predominantly Maori and Pacifica population of students. I'm an independent advisor for the Health and Disability Commission and the ACC. I work for Southern Cross, which is a private health insurer, about credentialing for doctors. I do reading recovery for the Department of Corrections, occasionally, not often, that's pro bono. Ditto for the advisor on Māori Health Action for the College of Surgeons. And also am a clinical director for a small private hospital, which is about 1 to 1.5 days a week, and I get a salary for that. So the next situation describes my personal situation. I go to the gym, I play petanque with about 30 other grumpy old retired people, and we have great fun. I enjoy my music with the Auckland Philharmonia. We do about 10 concerts a year as a subscriber. The Auckland Fine Arts Society produces a great program which we go to. I read a lot. My periodicals are the Weekly Guardian, the New Yorker, and the New Zealand Geographic magazine. I read mostly non-fiction. I do an overseas trip about once a year, and within Australia or New Zealand about 4 times a year. The next slide shows I'm mortgage-free. The National Provident Fund is about 37% of my income. National Super, about 15%. I got the investments that I talked about earlier, gives me about another 20%. And that's all tax-free. And the sundry other, that's Ormiston and AUT, give me a sum of about 2.1K after tax. So the next slide summarizes. You'll probably be retired for up to 25 years. You must plan. Have a purpose, keep and stay fit, and don't forget your social contacts. So I just wanted to point out in my last slide that the first slide I showed looked like a sunset. It's not. It's a sunrise. And there's my email address. I hope you enjoy the rest of the conference, and I hope the session on transitions in our medical careers went well this morning. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And as I said, I'd love to hear from you sometime. Thanks very much.